Blog Talk Radio.
Why must we feel our futures so uncertain? Why must we feel our presence is a burden? Living day to day of crumbs from the table, this dependency must end. I know that we are able to build a life.
just merely outside of the box, as you would call it. It sets us apart. It makes us different. So in taking that kind of a role, we should already see a great blessing on us and freeing us from the binds of the culture. All praise is due to Allah.
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar.
Imam Wardi Muhammad.
Dear beloved believers, brothers and sisters, visitors, friends, peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. Praise be to Allah.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil
Alameen. Praise be to Allah, guardian, evolver, the cherisher and sustainer of all the worlds. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lahu. I bear witness that nothing is worthy of worship except Allah alone. There is nothing like unto Him. Wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu. And I bear witness that Muhammad is His servant and His messenger. Dear beloved people, I'm happy to be with you today again in Oakland, California. In Chicago, they told me, say, well, you really going back to Oakland? I said, well, didn't I tell you I left already? I'm just here for some business. So they accepted that. This time it was very easy to come back, come here to Oakland. My wife, she even wished me farewell. She said, have a good time. See you when you get back. Yeah, so everything's beautiful. And we thank Allah for making things possible for us. I want to, before going into my talk this afternoon, and let me see what time we have here. We have to keep up with the time. We ran a little late today. We shouldn't be late, but I guess we can be excused since this is the first day returning from Chicago from the trip. You know, this religion is really growing in America, that is. Everywhere I go, I meet Muslims. Men and women, young and old too. When we were getting ready to board the airplane to come here in Chicago, a young man walked up and he said, aren't you? He looked at me, looking. I said, wa alaikum assalam. So I said, you going to San Francisco? He said, no, I'm going to Oakland. I said, that's where I'm going. I'm going to read from the chapter of the Quran called The Believers, beginning with the first verse and reading through the 10th verse. No, the 11th. We're going to read through the 11th verse. 1 through 11. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. I seek refuge with Allah from the rejected Satan, the enemy. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قد أفلح المؤمنون الذين هم في صلاتهم خاشعون والذين هم عن اللغو معرضون والذين هم للزكاة فاعلون والذين هم لفروجهم حافظون إلا على أزواجهم أو ما ملكت أيمانهم فإنهم غير ملومين فمن ابتغى وراء ذلك فأولئك هم العادون والذين هم لأمانهم بالأمان لأمانتهم وعهدهم راعون والذين هم على صلاتهم يحافظون أولئك هم الوارثون الذين يوارثون الفردوس هم فيها خالدون. In English, the believers with the name Allah, most gracious, most compassionate, the believers must eventually win through. The believers must eventually win through. Those who humble themselves in their prayers, who avoid vain talk, who are active in deeds of charity, who abstain from sex except with those joined to them in marriage bonds of the captives or of the captives whom their right hand possessed. For in their case, they are free from blame. But those whose desires exceed those limits are transgressors. Those who faithfully observe their trust and their covenant and who guard their prayers, those will be the heirs who will inherit paradise. They will dwell therein forever. Now, in these verses on the believer, al-mu'minun, on the believer, the first verse says that the believers must win through. The believers must be victorious. The believers cannot fail. Then it establishes who are the believers. الَّذِينَ هُمْ فِي صَلَاتِهِمْ حَافِظُونَ. Those, pardon me, الَّذِينَ هُمْ فِي صَلَاتِهِمْ خَاشِعُونَ. First, خَاشِعُونَ. Those who make their prayers with a feeling of wonderment and fear of Allah. And those who avoid vain talk. The word is lagwi. Lagwi is empty, pointless, silly, useless activity. Conversations that have no real purpose, no real point, not increasing anybody in any good. Just silly, empty, pointless, purposeless talk that leads to the same kind of behavior and action. So these are descriptions of the believers. And they are active in deeds of charity. And they abstain from sex. Sex has been called by some of the scholars, men of science, psychology, that is, the strongest urge in man, not the strongest urge, sex. And the religion points it out because when man comes into his strength, when he first comes into his strength, he's occupied with sex. Man began to feel his strength when he's 12, 13, 14 years old. He began to feel his strength, began to show signs of manhood coming, mustache, little beard or something. And the sex urge begins to bother him. And as he goes on, the sex urge seems to kind of abate, weaken gradually, and he's able to give himself more to establishing a life. You see? Well, what's in the way? Some men, they don't make it. They carry the same mind that puberty gave them to the grave. The sex, chasing the women, impressing the women, getting the women, occupies him until he goes to the grave. And he never really do anything worthwhile for society. You see? So this urge is strong in us. It's the urge of life, though, isn't it? That's the urge of life. If we would study that urge in the context of a life, in the context of the whole life, we would see that that urge is a good thing. It's a good thing. And frankly speaking, I wish society was ordered differently, so youngsters could marry if they wanted to at the time of puberty. Yes. And the society, their fathers, their mothers, their elder brothers and sisters, those who can manage, those who've established themselves, they should take care of them and encourage them to study and learn knowledge and skills to be able to be more productive while they are exercising the nature, which is to have sex. You see? By restraining ourselves for so many years, it creates problems. Nature can only be restrained so long, then you're going to have problems. You see? So you go too long restraining yourself, and you might turn out to be a sissy, a homosexual, or a lesbian, or a monk or something. Yeah. You never can tell which way you go. Right? Mm-hmm. Or just one of those freaks, you know? Some of them, you can't give a name to them. They're not lesbians, they're not homosexuals, they're not monks. Excuse me for putting monks in that category. They're just something different. They're just freaks. You never know what you turn out to be. Society, if it was ordered with respect for what nature must do, what nature wants. Nature wants growth. Nature wants to improve society. A man, when he mates with a woman, he takes on responsibilities. He has to then make concessions. He can't just have his way all the time. He has to make concessions. And she can't have her way all the time. The two have to make concessions, you see? So if these youngsters were brought into a relationship like that younger, we see more manhood in our society. Yeah. See more manhood in our society. But because our youngsters stay teenagers too long, we have little manhood in our society. Not enough manhood in the society. I have a daughter, she just turned 18. She's with me now. And she told me, Bakira, she told me that her boyfriend proposed to her before she left Chicago. Said that when she comes back, he wants to get married. I said, well, that's very good. I'm happy. She said she wants to get married. It's very good. She could have said that when she was 13, and I would have said, very good. Right. You can get married. You don't have to wait till you get 18 or 21 or 40 to get married. Right. We got to take care of them anyway. So why not let them have some peace while we're doing it? And in a lawful manner. That's the best. It'll be lawful and decent. Sometimes it's not good for girls too young to have babies, you know, to have babies. That's another matter, you know. But it's a good idea to accept marriage at a young age. If you don't, then you accept adultery or fornication. Somebody told me once that I don't believe it. I was telling them the life I live. I don't believe it. You mean you tell me a rat smell teeth and don't bite it? I said, yeah, I'm not a rat. And some rat smell teeth and don't bite it. They suspect something's up. They pass it by. Let's continue. Who abstain from sex. If we can resist the strong urge, that's the strong urge, sex. If we can resist that strong urge, then that gives you strength to resist temptations that are not as strong. Many temptations are strong for certain individuals, you know. May not be strong for everybody, but strong for those individuals. Many temptations. The sex urge, by being so much the nature of the male and female, it's one that if we can tame it, it will result in us being able to count all the other urges with more intelligence, you see. Now, when we marry, do we stop trying to restrain our sex urge? No, we still have to restrain our sex urge. We are married. That doesn't mean we stop. And when you get married, it doesn't mean that you're getting away from the problem of sex. You're just traveling in the right direction. Not that you're getting away from the problem of sex. Because if I'm married, I still have to restrain my sex. My desire might be for another woman. I have to keep my desire for the woman that I'm married to. See? And then there's times when she might be tired, might be sick or something, and I might be 363 horsepower, 660 horsepowers, you know. Yeah. But she's tired, or she's sick or something. And another sister over there, she just looking and tempting me, you know. She knows my wife is sick, you know. She just working on me. I have to restrain myself, right? Yeah. So that practice never stops. It's something that we have to do all life. Something's always tempting us, especially the mates. Women and men are tempting each other. And don't think that when you get 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 years old, that's all over. Just for some, it's all over. Not all over for everybody. A lot of old women and men, they have a lot of problems with sex. Yeah, right. These instructions from God, they are the best. They are the best. And we should remember that what we are talking about here is the believers. The believers. Anyone can say he's a Muslim, but who is a believer? Believer is a big name to live up to. Except with those joined to them in marriage bonds. We can't have sex out of marriage. Or are the captives whom their right hand possess. Now, some of us may think, well, it's either your wife or a woman that you're taking care of, a woman in your charge. Those that your right hand possess means those that you are providing for, or those that you are responsible for, in charge of. Now, it has to be understood that certainly it's permissible for you to have a sister that is in your service, working for you or something. But there is no sex in Islam without proper marriage. You have to marry that sister. You have to marry that sister. So accept those with whom you are married, are those that your right hand possess, meaning that except with your wives are captives that you have and you desire them, so the religion encourages man to take care of the captives. Isn't that a beautiful religion? Yes. There's a captive, have no family no more, have no friends no more. She's in the Muslim society. Maybe she ran from the enemy, or maybe she was captured in war with the enemy. But she's alone. She needs a husband. So this religion encourages the man to marry that captive woman, to give her social status with other women, give her protection with other women. That's a beautiful religion. Some might say, oh, well, that's polygamy. That's more than one wife. Well, you weigh that against the woman being abandoned, left without anyone to protect her, subject to fall into prostitution. You weigh that with the evils that we have in our society today, and then tell me, is that wrong or is that merciful? I think it's merciful. It's good and it's merciful that God would encourage men to take care of women so they don't go out to prostitution, so they have social status equal with the other women. Yes. That's a great mercy, great blessing. Well, how come we can't have more than one wife, Chief? I'm going to tell you that a little while later. I think the principle that we should be mindful of in regards to marriage and women, male and female mating, is this. The Quran says, and marry women, but not seeking lust, or not being moved by lust. That's the key. If I'm looking at a woman because she's shapely, that's wrong. But I got a wife. I'm happy with my wife. But here's a sister, she's more shapely. So now I say, I can have another one. I can have as many as four. I can have another one. You can't have that one, because the religion doesn't accept that you have that woman out of luck. You want her for her physical shape? For her youth? No, it's not accepted. Not accepted. You want her because your wife can't bear children anymore, and you and your wife would like to see you continue to have children? That's another matter. You want her because your wife can't handle the duties of a wife anymore, and your wife has agreed that it's okay for you to have it? That's a different case. You see? When your wife is mentally incapacitated, that's a different case. Many reasons that justify a man taking on another wife. Now, here in this society, you do it too. But you first supposed to put away that woman. Right? Yeah, I'm supposed to divorce that woman. Say, well, she's mentally, she can't manage. She's mentally, she can't handle it. Say, well, divorce her and get you another wife. The woman will do with this one. They stick her in another house. But I love her. We've lived together. We have a life together. She doesn't know me and recognize me as that man now, but I know she's, I recognize her. I can't stick her away like that. She's not dangerous. We can live together. Well, sorry, that's not the law. That's a wrong law. That's a wrong law. If that woman can stay with me in peace and is happy with me, why should I stick her in an institution? If she accepts the situation, she's happy with me, I shouldn't stick her in an institution. I should keep her with me. and many other justifications. Oh, he come here to justify polygamy. You wait till I get a second wife, then you talk like that. I got one and I'm satisfied. What? I don't want another one. But I sure wish a lot of you all had more than one to take some of the pimps and whores off the street. Now, hold up though. I told you I got a final comment. Yes. Those whose desires exceed these limits are transgressors. Transgressors. We don't want to be transgressors. We want to live within the law of the religion. And believers are those who faithfully guard their trust. Don't you know that's the big problem with our society? People don't care nothing about the trust that others put in them, constantly betraying the trust that people put in them. That's the problem with society. You lend somebody your car, you don't see it till next week, and he said he's coming back today. Or he said he's going to pick up his wife, and he's taking it to go out and pick up some dope. Me and other things happening all the time. That amounts to the problem that we have in this society, which is trust. Absence of trust. No respect for trust. We have to keep our trust. The Muslim society should be a safe society. Safe society. And it should be safe and secured because people are responsible and trustworthy. We have to be responsible and trustworthy people. And look what comes behind that. And who strictly guard their prayer. That tells us something. Can we expect a believer to protect the interests of the society and he's neglecting his prayer? How is he going to protect the interests of the society? He called himself a Muslim and he doesn't even think to pray to God. He knows it's time to pray. He knows Muslims pray daily, and it doesn't bother him that he's not praying. So how can we expect for him to watch over the welfare of the society, when he cares nothing about his obligation to the first boss? So either he is ignorant, or he's not really a believer. Yeah. So we should help each other understand this religion, so we can accept our responsibilities. First responsibility is to behave rightly before your Maker. They will be the heirs who will inherit paradise. They will dwell there in forever. Praise be to Allah. And we hope that He blessed us with strong faith so we can continue the good life. One of the prayers that Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, often prayed, a dua, a plea to God, after he had made the form of prayer and other times, he would say, O Allah, keep our hearts from deviating after you have guided us aright. It's our hearts that we have to be aware of. You know, many of us come from Christian religion, and perhaps some of you remember the preachers taking different texts. Perhaps you remember him taking a text about the beam being one, singular, and the whole body being filled with light, because the beam is singular, singular. You see? It has two references, but the main one is to your desires, to your intention, to your desires. If we are confused in our desires, then our mind will be confused. But if we are straight in our desires, the mind most likely will be straight. So what do we want? What do we desire? Do we desire a good, straight, truthful life? Then that life is best acquired when the whole being, his spirituality and his mind, is focused on one objective. And what better aim is that than there is, pardon me, than to aim for God's pleasure. To aim to please Allah, the Almighty. If we have minds like that, that aim to please Allah, the Almighty, then light will come into the whole body. There won't be no confusion. You won't be confused. But if my aim is not yet established, then really I'm disorganized. I'm disoriented. My life is loose, hanging. You see? I don't have no vision myself of my own life. Money is pulling on me. Women is pulling on me. Or some friend or something pulling on me. And I can't see any of these things in any kind of pattern wherein I can establish which one is best. Which one should get priority over the others. I haven't set any priority. So someone come out with a song and wreck that. Life wasn't established. That even wasn't established. It was in bad repair. But a song come out and even wrecked that. Then associates say, hey, what happened to you? The girlfriend, what happened to you? The business, what happened to you? I don't know, man. I don't know. Music can come and wipe out the little thing you had, right? Yes, a new number, that's all. You know anything, that new number has given you a new number. Yeah, I've seen people. In fact, I see them every day. People who change personalities just like the days change, one behind another. Yeah. Even their voice change. Voice change. Walk change. I noticed the stewardess on the airplane. You all don't mind me talking to you like this, do you? I noticed the stewardess on the airplane. She was walking. Stewardess walking on the airplane. And she was walking like she was surging into something. You know, just like that. Like she was just going, surging towards something. You know, like this here. And I said, they didn't used to walk like that. This is a new walk. You know, like that spring. The spring that's pushing them this way, you know. I can't do that walk like they can do it. They can do that walk. I said, well, maybe it's the shoe. The way they're building the shoes now. And I look, I said, well, the heel is still looks like the same. It's high heel. The same. They're both high heels. The high heel the other woman wore a year ago or 2 or 3 years ago. Same, look like the same heel. But this woman seems to be surging forward. And she's just gone. She's surging forward, you know. A tendency to fall forward. But she's checking it, and she's looking real cool because she knows how to bounce and move with it, you know. And when she speaks, she sounds just like the other one I saw surging and bouncing the same way. Yeah. They sound alike. They walk alike. They sound alike. And if she laughs, she laughs like the one I saw surging and bouncing. They laugh alike. You ever notice these things? Yeah. They laugh alike. They walk alike. They talk alike. I think they call those things, what do they call them? Automatons? Clones. They used to call them automatons. Automatons. Now they call them clones. Yeah. They act alike. They talk alike. And they even respond alike. I said laugh, but they even respond alike. If you say something, oh God. And if you heard one, you heard all of them. You say it, you say, same it. My God. Oh God. Huh? Yeah. Everything is just a big surprise, you know, now. Everything surprised them. So what time did you get here? I got here 4 minutes after one. So did you pick up any hamburgers? No, I didn't. No, I didn't pick up any hamburgers. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. And like I said, if you heard one, you heard all of them. And if you saw one respond, you saw all of them respond. They walk alike. They talk alike. They respond alike. And they call this freedom. How can it be freedom when the society is putting out a bunch of semi-lying people? Yeah, they call this freedom. But what I'm looking at is an assembly line society. Let's see what time it is. I'm trying to look like Popeye. You know, Popeye, he never looks, when he concentrates, he never uses both eyes. He closes one and looks out the other. Or when he gets into trouble. Close one of those eyes. Anytime he get uptight, he close one of those eyes. Okay. We ain't in bad shape yet. Now, getting back to the believers. Believers don't live in the world. We live in faith. We live in our faith. You hear a Muslim tell the brother, another Muslim, when you're leaving, he say, see, I'm man in law. He's reminding his brother to stay in the faith. See, I'm man in law. You see? Muslims live in the faith. They don't live in the world. The faith is our sanctuary in the world. It's our haven, our security in the world. No Muslim should be subject to these kinds of influences that throw out clones. No. You know, the new names these people get always play on some other name. You know, clones close to clown. Yeah. Clone, clown. Clowns, clones. All right. Let's now deal with this big question. If polygamy is acceptable for Muslims, and how come we can't have more than one wife in Oakland, California, USA? That's why, man, because it's Oakland, California, USA. Now, you can go to Egypt, to Saudi Arabia, go to those places and have your wives within the law. But if you are under another law, under another state, you are not supposed to exercise liberties, freedoms, rights that conflict with the rights of that state unless there is real justification for that. There has to be a real justification for that. Then you resist, you protest, you go against the law of that state because it's an unjust law. What Muslim can say the one wife is such a burden on Muslims that he should protest, go against the law of the state, the United States? None of us can say that. Because Allah says himself in the Quran, and one is best for you if you but understood. And one is best if you only understood. The Muslim accepts that one wife is the better relationship for the person, but sometimes more than one life is better for the society, given certain situations, certain conditions. All right? Such as war that take away many of the males and leave too many females without husbands. Or some other situation can make polygamy desirable. You see? But when you are under another law, you obey that law as long as that law is not an outrageous affront to your religion, to what you believe in. This book here is on the penal code in the religion. And I want to read to you from this book just a few paragraphs. Firstly, let's read on Omar, the Caliph. Most of the Muslims are aware, we know, familiar, we are aware of Caliph Omar. May Allah be pleased with him. Great Caliph, one of the four. Great Caliph. It was reported to Omar, Allah be pleased with him, that some young men in the service of Hatib ibn Abi Bakr had stolen the she-camel of a man from the tribe of Muzah. When Omar questioned the young men, they admitted the theft. So he ordered their hands be cut. Now, most Americans are aware that Muslims cut off the hands of the thief. And they are aware of that law because the crusade survivors from the other side want to keep non-Muslim societies feeling that the Muslim society is so fanatical that they have to be watched and contained. Never let them have their freedom to practice their religion because they are fanatics of the worst type. They want to keep other societies. They want to keep other societies believing that of us. So they spread rumors and blow things up out of proportion and put them in the wrong picture to achieve their selfish, hateful aim. Now, let me continue to read. Omar said, pardon me, yes. When Omar questioned the young men, they admitted the theft, so he ordered their hands to be cut. But on second thought, he said, by Allah, that is, O God, by God, I would cut their hands if I did not know that you employ these young men and starve them so that they would be permitted to eat that which is prohibited from prohibited them. So he then, on second thought, he turned his attack toward the accuser. And he said, I would cut these thieves' hands, but you give them starvation wages. And the pressure that you put on them, pressure them into doing what is unlawful. So let's continue. Now, you know, I'm happy to read this. You know I've been teaching you this for 6 years, 7 years, and never knew that the Muslim had said it in the book. But I live by the spirit of the Quran, and I know the spirit of the Quran is against any fanatical or cruelty, fanaticism or cruelty. No, both fanaticism and cruelty is condemned in the Quran. Yes, he says. Then he addressed their employer, saying, by Allah, since I have not cut their hands, I am going to penalize you with a fine that shall pain you. He turned his rage from the thieves to their employer, who was giving them starvation wages and forcing them to do unlawful things because of their situation. He turned his rage toward the employer, and then he penalized the employer by charging them twice the price of the camel that he wanted them to be punished for stealing. Yeah. How do you like that? Isn't that the kind of law we need in this society? Right. Would you want to be something other than a Muslim? Whoever does only makes himself a... Say it loud. Be Muslim and proud. Say it loud. Only makes himself a fool. That's right. And that's in the Quran, isn't it? He who forsakes the religion of Abraham that Prophet Muhammad had established, only makes himself a fool. I agree with that. I have lived to see that myself. Now, let me skip a few lines here dealing with that. That's plain enough. And get here a little bit further. Now, secondly, the punishments provided by the law, that is the law of Al-Islam, are applicable only when and where a proper Islamic state exists. They are applicable. That means those laws are to be carried out only when and where a proper Islamic state exists. Now, this is not your uneducated imam talking. This is scholar in this religion talking. All right? So those who would question what I say, oh, where did he attend school? Did he go to Azhar? No, I didn't go to Azhar. Did he attend college? No, I didn't. So we don't have to accept what he says. Well, please accept what this scholar says. He went to those colleges and universities. All right? Now, so, you can have your polygamy when and where a proper Islamic state exists. That's where you can have your polygamy. Don't tell me what the Muslims are doing in Hoopu-Toopu. I don't want to hear it. I'm not talking about the Muslims in Hoopu-Toopu. Some Muslims in Hoopu-Toopu commit adultery and call it marriage. Certainly they do. They say, oh, you're visiting this country? Yes. How long are you going to be here? 2 weeks. Oh, let's arrange a marriage. You're away from your wife. The duty of a Muslim to get a wife, get the woman, get the wife for his brother. Let's arrange a marriage. And they have a name for it. You marry this woman just for the time you're there. When you leave, the marriage is finished. You're going back home to your wife. So that's their creation. That's not this religion. Knowing that these people that we use for models of authority fail in so many areas when it comes to uprightness, how can you of this community go out and bring me in somebody from the outside as a model of authority? Who stopped drinking? Who stopped gambling? Who punished fornicators and adulterers? Who brought offenses before the imam, before the minister? Who tried to clean people up? Was it them over there or us over here? That's our history. We have a history for trying to clean people up and make them fit in this religion. We have a history of that. Then how are you going to go out there and get somebody else? Well, I don't care what Imam Wise Dean say, brother. He's not Allah. He's not the prophet. He's not my teacher. This religion, we all follow Prophet Muhammad, brother. And the Imam from Hoopu-Toopu said this is all right. He didn't say, and the prophet said this is all right. He said, and the imam from Hoopu-Toopu said this is all right. So actually, he's following not the prophet, but the imam from Hoopu-Toopu. And really, he's following himself. It just so happened that the imam from Hoopu-Toopu goes along with something that he wants. And that's why he doesn't want to follow Imam Wahiduddin Muhammad, because Imam Wahiduddin Muhammad won't go along with the thing that he wants. So he finds him an imam outside of our community from Hoopu-Toopu, because he lets him do his thing. Pitiful. Let's see. Our time is going. Time is running out here. Yes. All right, we'll go for a few more minutes. Now, Nasura called an Nahla. We read these words and understand that Muslims receive the words of the Quran as the direct words of the Almighty who created everything. We have to know that, accept that, in that awareness, in that sense. Muslims, real Muslims that is, they don't live in a dream religion. They live in a real religion. And when we say God said, we mean just that. We are not speaking a language that is empty. We're speaking a language that is true. A language that is true. Not a language to impress, a language that is true. That's why whenever Muslim recites from the Quran, when he has finished, he should say, Sadaqallahu al-Azim. God the Mightiest spoke the truth. Because it's not what we say, it's not what Prophet Muhammad says, it's what the Quran is, what Allah, the creator of everything, what he said. And I wish you could understand that with your good senses. As well as with your heart. Allah the Most High says in the Quran, وَاللَّهُ أَخْرَجَكُمْ مِنْ بُطُونِ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ. And Allah brings you out from the wombs of your mothers. From the wombs of your mother. And again, Allah the Most High says, and He formed you in the wombs of your mother. Shouldn't we have faith then in the same Lord that has created us, has given us our form, our nature, that He also can guide us best? You see? Now, it goes on to say, have you not observed the birds? Have you not given your attention to the birds suspended in the atmosphere of the sky? And there seems to be nothing holding it up, or nothing holds it up except Allah. Now, you know, many of us in the city, we never get an opportunity to give much attention to things happening in the natural environment, you know. But I have been out of the city, in the city too. But I really noticed it once when I was out of the city. I was on a trip out of the country, in fact. And I noticed these birds, how they were just riding the air. And it wasn't windy, but they had their wings out like this, and their wings seemed to be motionless. And they were just gliding on the air. Seemed to be motionless. And I don't know whether it really happened or not, but I saw one look like to me, he started going backwards. You know, it could have been my mind playing tricks on me. But he still looked like he stood still, looked like he was going backwards. And maybe the wind motion was taking him backwards, you know. I don't know what it was. But it seemed like he was going backwards. And he was just up there making no effort at all. Suspended up there like that. Now, God calls our attention to this. And he says, Allah says, surely in that is a sign to a people who have faith. Didn't say to any people, to people who have faith. It's a sign to a people who have faith. It didn't say to a people who have brains. Yes! To a people who have faith. So the one who has the intellectual mind, he'll read this and he will approach it from an intellectual interest. Right? And he will look at that and he'll try to get to understand that. Can you see when you're not looking in the right direction? How can you see the thing when you ain't even looking in that direction? So he will look, you see, and he will say, oh, yes, that's true. Allah, only Allah is holding him up. Say, brother, Allah created the air. Allah is holding him up with his air. But he's looking at it from the intellectual point of view or from the scientific point of view, right? But this is not for him. It says, for a people who have faith. It's talking to the faithful believer. The faithful believer. He knows what connection to make here. He knows what connection to make. The scientist, he makes a scientific connection. The fool, he makes no connection. He just says, oh, that ain't nothing. My kite stay up there too. He makes no connection. The scientist, he makes a connection. He connects that phenomena with the creator who created the phenomena. Allah made the possibilities for the phenomena. And the faithful man, he relates that to faith. When that bird is like that, he is still. Right? You heard the preacher say, be still. I heard a preacher say that. Preacher was rapping over the radio man and he just stopped. He said, be still. Concentrate. Like that bird. Up there stressed out. He got his wings stretched out. Straight. Tense. But still, ain't moving a bit. He's still laying as still as he possibly can. Ain't doing nothing on his own, but holding himself in check. Right? And he's fine, he got support. Other bird, right along up there with him, he's battling like mad. And that one, he just... Yeah. Faith. And he's in a dangerous situation. He's up there where creatures are battling to keep him falling. And he ain't struggling. He just stressed out. Faith. Yes. Once you have developed dependency on Allah over a long period of time, day after day, year after year, you get to a point where you can be in dangerous situations and show no uneasiness, no excitement. You just are calm and tranquil while others are all upset. And you so cool.
What's sustaining you while others are falling? While others are battling and tearing out their hair, biting their fingernails? Yeah, yeah. What's sustaining you? How come you so cool?
All right.
Yeah. Can't you see that the heavens have been raised without pillars?
be so free.
الحمد لله رب العالمين وبسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمد رسول الله. The brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, thank you for joining us this morning for All Things Human. Alhamdulillah, we are continuing in the subject matter of human language and the Holy Quran. Human language and the Holy Quran. That's going to happen, and inshallah. So we have a few minutes in, but I always love to take a second. I ask you to keep the comment brief if you have a comment to make before we start for the balance of the broadcast tonight. Today. Just punch one, blog talk. We can do that for the moment. I can see Facebook comments, so. For these few minutes, 5 minutes or less, we'll take comments. If there are any, not, life goes on. This is your opportunity. All right. One last time. Let me reload my studio, make sure I'm not missing anyone. Okay. All right, so I'm gone. Alhamdulillah. Glad you're here, of course. Okay, so we're talking about human language. Alhamdulillah, and I went over last week's or the last portion of last week's All Things Human broadcast on the subject matter. And alhamdulillah, this is no boast, but I have to say that I am very pleased with the clarity, the symmetry, the completeness of the idea up to that point about human language. And those of you who are with me and have been with us for these past few weeks, especially since Ramadan, because that has been my interest. My interest has been really, really cinching up and strengthening our comprehension of the nature of human language and nature of Quranic language. So I feel real good about it. As I said last week, and this is what I'm going to do right now, we're going to go directly to the matter of human language, the matter of human language. Now I'm speaking now from a categoric perspective and from a descriptive perspective. Human language, like any other, rather as another property of being human. Like when we talk about human beings as Homo sapiens, right? Homo sapiens is the thinking creature, right? Homo sapiens, sapien, the creature who can think about it's thinking, all right? And also Homo erectus, that kind of, I'm just giving you the language because these are different descriptions that are applied to man, but because of a particular property, Homo erectus, his property of standing up on two legs, right? Homo erectus, Homo habilis, I believe it is. The tool-making creature. I mean, let me get that straight. Yeah. Sometimes it's all a class, right? So we're still learning. A bit of this. But, well, see habibulous, but it's like somebody's Twitter handle or something. Yeah, okay, it's Homo habilis. Homo habilis. It's translated as handyman. Handyman. So it's H-A-B-I-L-I-S, not Bibi, not Bibi. It's Homo habilis. It's a species of archaic human being from the early Pleistocene, Pleistocene, or Pleistocene, Pleistocene of the East and South Africa. About 2.3 million years ago, all right? So that's that, okay. So also, human being can also be described as, what is it, Homo narens? Let's see. Yeah, Homo narens. Homo narens, the storytelling human being. Homo narens. So yeah, many, many different labels that are tied to the human being. okay, so now, you know, if we wanted to, quote unquote, another label for the human being, which is Homo loquacious, right? A little bit of humor there, but you know, he talks. You know, this speaking creature. Now, Imam Muhammad in the lecture we played, there's more to that. In my archive, it has like four parts to it. So presumably there are four parts. It's a ta'alim from 1981 that the Imam gave here in Oakland. And so we've listened to an hour of it. Let's say that there may be three more hours. I don't know. There may be three more hours too, but we'll play more of that, inshallah, next week. But in his address toward the end of the portion that we played today, his comments included that we should, and that his hope is, and his desire is for us to accept the words of the Quran as the words, pardon me, as the direct words from the creator of everything, right? So the words of the Quran as the direct words, such as to say, when we say God said, that is, when we say God said, then he's saying to really believe that, act like it, embrace it. It's what the creator of everything said. It really makes a difference when you read it and you say you are reading what God said, what Allah, what He decided to say. That I'm not gonna stress it much more in that. And he went on to say, he said, the language of the Quran is not a language that is empty. It is not a language that is empty. It is not a language to impress. That is, the role of the language of the Quran, its goal is not to impress. He said, it's a language that is true. It's a language that is true. So important. I have to go on. I'm going to read two sections of the expression from the Quran. I'm not going to get into it. Right? What I'm talking about, that is the emphasis that I'm making for this lesson and this series of lessons, is not to teach you grammar. It's not to teach you Arabic vocabulary. It's not for that purpose. It's to understand just that, as the Imam said, to understand that reality. Once you understand the power of human language And then you, that human language in possession of words from the Creator, the power of human language, it's like you got an automobile, right? Automobile. This, we're in the era of Fast and Furious 9, right? So you have an automobile. So, you know, you have stock engines, and then you can soup up the engine, et cetera, and then put NOS, nitrous oxide, and put nitrous oxide in that souped up engine. It's like you really got something going on, right? So in terms of speed, if the object being, well, the vehicle getting from point A to point B faster than others, well, then that's what it's all about. It's all about what can you do to this engine in order for it to get to go where it's going faster, right? Okay. When you understand what human language is and the power of human language without any other added aspect, let's just call it non-revelatory human language. Human language without revelation is powerful because of the distinction that it gives to human beings over all other forms of life. That's without a revelation. That's without operation, if you will. Just that's the power. But then when you add the power of revelation to human language, now you've got something else altogether. That's what we, that's what we're aiming at pressing out. Right. So therefore, I'm just going to read the expression of it and see just that. I'm going to be reading the English, and I'm not reading the Arabic. The English, obviously, is not, or I should be obvious to you, it's not, quote-unquote, as rich as the Quran because it's not capable of carrying all that the Quran carries in it. But even when you read the Arabic, you still can only and will only draw from it, A, what you have the capacity to draw from it, and B, in the world that you live in and in the language that you speak, you can only draw out of it what your language is capable of transposing from the revelatory language, Quranic Arabic, into your spoken language, your spoken language. So, point is, you can't get all that is in the Quran over into any language. So, the bottom line, in order to really live the Quran in the fullest possible sense, is you have to transition from the mind that your language gave you into the mind that Quranic language gives you. I'll tell you a story of a Hispanic guy that I spoke a couple of lines of Spanish to him. He said, "Oh, very good." He said, "You know, when you speak two languages, you become two people." Okay, the same way with Quran. When the Quran, when you speak English, but then when you learn how to think and speak and read, quote unquote, not for vocabulary purposes, that is everyday on the street purposes, because Quranic language is not on the street. Point is that when you learn that language, and it populates your mind, and it becomes the fuel for your thinking, you get a new mind. Ar-Rahman. علم القرآن خلق الإنسان علمه البيان. Oh, there's so much in there, and we're working on that through the Jum'ah. Okay, I'm just trying. I don't want you to lose the benefit of the ideas of what I'm saying, because, well, you know, need to read in Arabic. Not really. Not for the lesson that I'm giving you. You don't. And this is no excuse. I just want you to understand in this way. Where the imam says, for every system there's a benefit. In order to get the benefit out of the system, you have to think in terms of function. Anytime you're not thinking in terms of function, then you're thinking in a diseased way. You know, sometimes people would accuse Imam Muhammad of not teaching fiqh and not teaching this or that. He said, those are special classes for people who are at another level. It's like wanting the imam to teach Yale and Harvard and Princeton law at a regular ta'aleem in the hood. That's not that kind of thing. Let's move on, Fahim. All right, so let's read this expression from 42, 51 to 53. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. It says, it is not fitting for man that Allah should speak to him except by inspiration or from behind the veil or by sending a messenger to reveal with Allah's permission what Allah wills, for he is most high, most wise. Verse 52 of 42, I'm reading from chapter 42, so it's a short. 42:52, it says, and thus have we, by our command, sent inspiration to you. You did not know before what was revelation and what faith was, but we have made the Quran a light wherewith we guide such of our servants as we will. Verily, you do guide men to the straight way. 42:53 now, the way of Allah, to whom belongs whatever is in the heavens and whatever is on earth. Behold how all affairs tend towards Allah. So that's the reading from 42:51 to 53. And the foundation of what we're focused on this morning is in the verse 41, which I'll read again before I read the next section. It is not fitting for man that Allah should speak to him except by inspiration or the three ways. By inspiration, that's one. From behind the veil, that's two. Or by sending a messenger, that's three. So these are the three ways that Allah communicates to man. Now, 43 verses 1 through 4. 43, what is 43? Surah 43 is Surah Az-Zukhruf. Az-Zukhruf is, one says, ornaments of gold. That's an expression of it, ornaments of gold. So let's go to 43. It begins, أَوْزُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ حَمِيمٍ. By the book that makes things clear, we have made it a Quran in Arabic that you may be able to understand and learn wisdom. And verily, it is in the mother of the book, in our presence, high in dignity, full of wisdom. Allahu Akbar. This Sadaqallahu Al-Azim. Very, very rich. Okay. So what I'm going, I laid that out there because that's the end. So, you know, where the Quran says this is, quote, unquote, using what we've been taught, right? Where the Quran says, so from whencesoever you start forth, turn towards the sacred mosque, right? Masjid al-Haram, right? Whencesoever you start forth, turn towards the sacred mosque. Okay, so even when you start a subject, even though this subject, we're not just starting this subject, but I'm saying, even when you start a subject, okay, begin with the end in mind is what one person, the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People guy, passed away. So, Stephen Covey, begin with the end in mind. Well, that's what the Quran tells us to do. Begin with the end in mind. The end of you all is to Allah, right? The end object is to Allah. And so when you start, then start going in that direction. So the destiny of what we're talking about is in those verses. In those verses, very, very rich. So we just say that first. Now, I'm going to read to you from an article done by a linguist. His name is Michael Egnor, E-G-N-O-R, and the article is from the page Evolution News and Science Today. Evolution News and Science Today. I don't have the direct title of the article, but I've given you the author's name. You can look it up. Michael Egnor, E-G-N-O-R, Evolution News and Science Today. And it says, I think it's something like, why is there human language? Why is there human language? You use that in your search and you'll find it. So what I'm reading abstractions from that article, and it's about human language. Let me try one more time to see if I can get the title. No, it's not going to work. So you can look it up. All right. So he speaks of signs, S-I-G-N-S, signs. So signs are anything that directs your attention to something. That's a sign. So you talk about like I point my finger, then that is a sign, right? That I'm directing your attention to something else. It's a sign. So anything that directs your attention to something is a sign. Anything that directs your attention to something, that's a sign, right? A billboard, let's take something obvious, right? The billboard. The billboard is directing your attention to whatever's on the billboard. Whatever's on the billboard, is directing your attention. Stop sign. Stop sign is directing your attention to your driving behavior, right? And so many others, the signs, period. Okay, so signs are critical to the whole thing, and we're very used to it, you know, the ayahs. When we say ayahs, we think of signs and the like. So signs are a big part of communications, but all communication is not language, but let's just keep going. So signs direct your attention to something, and there are two types of signs. In this article, he says there are two types of signs. So when you have signals, and you can see the word sign in signals, so there are two types, signals and designators. Signals and designators. All right, what are signals? Signals are noises or gestures or objects that direct attention to something else in the immediate environment. That's very important. Where you have the signal, whereas the, it's like you have smoke signals, right? Somebody's smoke signals, that's an object that directs your attention to something else. But it's in your immediate environment, the very fact. Scientific language talks about local and non-local communication. Well, that's a local communication in the sense that it has to reach your five senses with the intention. That is, it reaches your five senses with the intention to direct your attention to something in your immediate environment. All right. So, smoke. As I just said, smoke signals, all right? But then also we have the language where there's smoke, there's fire. Where there's smoke, there's fire. So smoke is also a sign or a signal that there's fire somewhere, right? I mentioned about pointing. Pointing, if I point to something, then I'm speaking about something in my immediate environment, right? It's a signal. Signals are directing attention to something else, but that's in the immediate environment. Also, a scream. The person screams. You know, even if you don't know, it's whatever, it's down the block or it's outside your house and you hear a scream, right? That's a signal. that's a signal to draw your attention to something. It's in your immediate environment to the extent that it is within earshot, right? It's within earshot, so that makes it a part of your immediate environment, and that scream is signaling something else. So that's signals. So again, the emphasis for signal is the fact that it is direct, bringing direct attention to something in your immediate environment. The second type of sign is designator. Designator. This designator are, for our focus, and in the article as well, the designator is a word, all right? So now you're distinguishing signs, that's the broad class, signs, bifurcation, that is two extensions out of signs is, out of signs is signals and designators. Signals are immediate. I'm going to abbreviate it for our purposes. Signals focus on things in your immediate environment. Designators can draw your attention to things that are not in your immediate environment. Right? So signals relate to the immediate environment, more sense-based, S-E-N-S-E, sense-based signals. Designators are less sense-based than are signals. So a designator and the prime designator we're talking about now is a word. A word. That's a different thing, a word. And what is it different about a word as opposed to a signal? It directs attention to something abstractly that is not like it. Designates or directs attention to something abstractly that is not like it, something that is not in the immediate physical environment, right? So anything comes to mind, you know, it's like even though there is water in my immediate environment, but the point is the word water, the word water. So you say that word, it's not a scream, it's not pointing a finger, it's not smoke connected with a fire somewhere. It's a word. It's a word. The word is water. But if you understand that, if you understand what water means or is or stands for, then you know what I'm talking about. It's not in your immediate environment, but I brought your attention to something that is not in your immediate environment. And that I use to bring your attention to something that is not in your immediate environment is itself abstract, word. This word, you don't, it's not palpable in any physical sense. It's not palpable in any physical sense. Even what strikes your ear is just the sound, but that's not the word. That you can hear the sound. The phonetic expression, water, water. I could say block a chop, whatever, block a chop. It's like, okay, that's just the sound, right? So the point is words are themselves abstract. Words are themselves abstract. And unlike signals, they can direct your attention. All signs direct your attention somewhere. Signals direct your attention to something in your immediate environment. Designators, as are words, they will bring your attention to something that is not in your immediate environment. They are capable of bringing your attention to something that is not in your immediate environment, and they themselves are abstract. They are not concrete. Pointing the finger is concrete. Screaming is concrete. Smoke is concrete. They are signals. Words are abstract. And they can point your attention, direct your attention away from your immediate environment to elsewhere. We got to move on. So I believe you got that. So what distinguishes a word from a signal is that a word directs attention to an object abstractly. So I use the term water, right? So there can, you could be in the middle of a desert, and if you know what the word water means, you know what we're talking about, even though it's not in your immediate environment. So the point is that the word water is itself abstract, and it draws your attention to something that is not in your immediate environment. A word, we are literally talking about verbiage. A word bears no physical relationship to the object that it designates. A word bears no physical relationship to the object that it designates, right? A word is a designator, and a word has no physical relationship to the object that it designates. For example, the word fire bears an abstract relationship to fire. That is, you know what fire is. You know what fire. You can bring it up in your mind right now. It's fire, fire. Yes, fire. But the word F-I-R-E bears no relationship to that physical, literal thing. Arabic, the term would be nar, right? The term is nar. What is that? What is it? What Spanish word is it? Fierro? Is it fierro? Fuente? Something. So the point is that in all different languages, you have different words for fire. And the English word and the French word and the Arabic word bears no more physical relationship to that thing that everybody knows as fire. It has no physical relationship to it, all right? So the word fire bears an abstract relationship to fire because it has been chosen in the various languages that we talked about to be the designator for that natural thing or that thing called fire, all right? So German has its word, French has its word, Spanish has its word, English, Arabic, et cetera. Okay, but what are they talking about? They're all talking about the same thing. They're talking about the same thing, fire, right? So just to repeat, what's true for this word fire is true for other words as well that are designating something, but the word being used to designate it, it has no physical relationship. It has an abstract relationship because it has the ability to bring your attention to that thing, even though it's not in your immediate environment, all right? So the word fire bears an abstract relationship with fire, whereas smoke bears a direct physical relationship to fire. Smoke is direct, whether smoke is fire. So in terms of smoke as a sign of fire, as a direct relationship to fire. But fire as a word for fire does not have a direct relationship with the thing that is designated. It has an abstract relationship. Okay, so signs, splitting off into signals and designators. The difference between signals and designators, I'm make it simple. You can work out, it helps you. Signals, immediate environment. Designators, not in the immediate environment. Signals directly connected to what they're bringing your attention to. Designators, not directly tied to what they're bringing your attention to. Words are different than signals. And words, therefore, are abstract. Signals are concrete. Words are abstract. Signals are concrete. Words are abstract. Signals are concrete. Signals, immediate environment. Words, not in the immediate environment, things that are abstract. All right. So words are signs that point to things abstractly. Therefore, the word fire designates actual fire. So that's what a word is, a designator. A word is a designator. It's telling you about something else. But the thing does not have to, and is not necessarily in the immediate environment, all right? time. Words allow us to designate and therefore think about and talk about things beyond our physical environment. So, I mean, really, that's it. So, okay, I can talk about ancestors, right? So ancestors, they're not here, but I can still talk about them, right? And I can think about them because I have words that designate things about them, et cetera. All right? And that's true for also values. It's true for values, right? So we're at such a level of civilization and evolution as human beings. We talk about things like justice and love and mercy and compassion and abstracts like mathematics and quantum physics and different other things. We are far down the road of human growth and development, and our language is what has pushed us there, and it's our language is what provides a path to higher things, right? That famous statement in the American parlance, where we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And among these, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? Those are all words. They are all designators. They are all pointing to something that is not necessarily in the immediate environment. So, but they are abstracts and they are real things. And those words put thoughts into, and they connect with thoughts that are in the hearts and minds and consciousness of individuals. What's doing that? The words are doing that. The words are doing that. So, but none of those things, even if we talk about the slave, the slave in his immediate environment, was he experiencing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? No, he was not. But the words point to something that is of a higher value, and that does actually exist. I'm speaking only right now of truth and reality, right? There are some false things that people speak about and say, and they designate things that they designate, meaning pointing to something or drawing your attention to something, which in fact they have what they say, it has connotation but no denotation, meaning that, it connotes something. You suggested it, like this three gods or five or 10 or 100 gods, right? Okay, well, you have words that speak about 100 gods. Okay, you do have those words that speak about 100 gods, but there is no reality for those 100 gods. You're designating something that does not exist. Now, somebody can think about what you said because you created words for it and because you did say it, and you can say that they are designating something, but connotation without denotation. There's nothing really that you're trying to point to. There's nothing real like that. And as we say, La ilaha illallah. In any case, so let's get away from that. So the idea is words allow us to designate and therefore think about and talk about things that are beyond our physical environment. That's what words do. Words allow you to go to places mentally, spiritually, consciously that you can't go without words. Words are vehicles of thought. Words are vehicles of thought. You want to go further places, you got to get the right word. You get the right word, you could travel. Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. The abstract nature of words, along with grammar, this is a big part, and it's been in the last 5 minutes or so this morning. Grammar is a big deal. The abstract nature of words, along with grammar, that's what makes language. That's what makes language. Only human beings have language. What is language now? Description, and from this linguist, the nature of language is words plus grammar. Words plus grammar. What is grammar? Grammar is the order given to words, right? Language is a system of abstract signs. Language is a system of abstract signs. So, the abstract nature of words, meaning its capacity for pointing to things that are not in your immediate environment, that's one thing. So you have words. Now, in order for meaning to come from words, then there is an order that these words have to follow. These words have to follow a particular order, or they don't make sense. They don't make sense. And so grammar is what makes words make sense. Grammar is what makes words make sense. So you can have words without grammar. When you look in a dictionary, you have whatever, millions of words, just including all dictionaries, right? You have millions of words, but those words don't mean anything until they are in a sentence. They don't mean anything until, when I say meaning, it can't bring you any benefit in terms of what are they good for? What is this word? Okay, you said this word, colloquial, whatever. That's just a word, colloquial. Okay, so what? It's a word, colloquial. What does it mean? What matters? What does it matter? What does it mean? Because you have to have a context for it in order for it to have meaning. The point is that words get their meaning and become language with the order given to them by grammar. All right. And so that's the thing. Okay, so human language. Human language are the words that human beings speak set to a particular order. Now that's language. It's not language until these words are put into a given order. So I'm thinking about terms in Arabic, for example, of lafz, kalima. These words, the way that something is said to be language or something that is said to be a word, is it has everything to do with what's necessary for it to bring meaning, what's necessary for it to bring meaning. So the point is, words without grammar don't give meaning. Words without grammar don't give meaning. But once words are put into a grammatic structure, now it's language because now it can communicate meaning. All right, so we'll leave that right there, and just have a couple of steps to go further to get that. Because once we understand that, once you understand the nature of human language, and then now you turn around and you look at the Quran, and you're reading the Quran and its words and its grammar is from the creator of the heavens and the earth. you think Martin Luther King Jr. or El Hajj Malik El Shabazz or whoever the supposed learned people in this world, when they speak, when they give their language, you think that their language is stronger and designating higher ideals than the creator of the heavens and the earth? No. So the words of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when we understand his words and his grammar, then you get his meaning, what he, the creator of the heavens and the earth, has decided to tell us and say to us. And when you know that words are designators to things that are not in your immediate environment, so Allah gives us language that takes us into realms of knowing that's beyond the scientists of this world. In fact, it leads the science of this world. The science of this world is grounded in insights, motivations, implications, designations that the Quran itself has brought in, that the Quran itself brought into the world, and then man's mind grabbing it and thinking on it and applying it built essentially the world that we have right now, the excellence of it. So inshallah, life goes on. We'll continue on that. Alhamdulillah. All right, y'all. God's peace be on everybody. Have a wonderful day. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.